This is a reading of a set of lectures by Rudolf Steiner called The Foundations of Human Experience. It was originally entitled The Study of Man. It was given roughly from August 20th, that's the opening address, August 20th, 1919. And the last lecture is, just double check here, was given this, excuse me, I have a lot of paper here and they don't have it, September 5th, 1919. And I think these were pretty much in order. There will also be a couple of additional lectures from 1917 that are included in the text. I'm beginning with a note of appreciation. A note of appreciation from the Waldorf School faculty. The first edition of this volume, published in 1932, contained a note of appreciation from the faculty of the Waldorf School in Stuttgart, describing the situation in which this course was held. At the end of the World War, in response to the request of some members of the Anthroposophical Society, Dr. Steiner held a series of comprehensive lectures about the threefold nature of the social organism, which formed the content of his book, Towards Social Renewal. The thoughts represented by Dr. Steiner prompted the industrialist, Emil Molde, to decide to found a school that was to be a germ for the free spiritual life. At his request, Dr. Steiner took over the leadership of this school and was continuously concerned with its success. Prior to the opening of the Waldorf School, Dr. Steiner held a pedagogical course for 3 weeks in August and September of 1919 that was attended by the teachers and by a number of other people who desired to work with this new pedagogy. The course was made up of three parts. The 14 lectures of the first part, which appear in this volume, presented the anthroposophical understanding of the human being as a basis for a pedagogy, reflecting the needs of our time in the near future. Connected with these was a series of lectures on utilizing this anthroposophical perspective as a teaching methodology. The two series of lectures are closely related and form a unified whole. Footnote 1, Practical Advice to Teachers, Rudolf Steiner Press, London, 1988, GA 294. End of footnote. A series of discussions followed the lectures in which Rudolf Steiner, together with the teachers, worked out the practicalities for particular areas of instruction and it discussed solutions of specific pedagogical problems. Footnote 2, Discussions with Teachers, Rudolf Steiner Press, 1992, GA 295. End footnote. Although this course took place quietly among a small circle, the participants experienced a spiritual event intended to help humanity reach a higher stage of development. As this work of Rudolf Steiner is now sent out into the world, the teachers of the Waldorf School wish to accompany it with a deep feeling of gratitude and the desire that it be taken up with understanding so that it may fructify education everywhere. End of note of appreciation. Opening address, given on the eve of the teacher's seminar, Stuttgart, August 20th, 1919, by Rudolf Steiner. This evening I wish to make some preliminary remarks. To achieve a renewal of modern spiritual life, the Waldorf School must be a true cultural deed. We must reckon with change in everything. The ultimate foundation of the whole social movement is in the spiritual realm, and the question of education is one of the burning spiritual questions of modern times. We must take advantage of the possibilities presented by the Waldorf School to reform and revolutionize the educational system. The success of this cultural deed is in your hands. Thus, you have much responsibility in working to create an example. So much depends upon the success of this deed. The Waldorf School will be living proof of the effectiveness of the anthroposophical orientation toward life. It will be a unified school in the sense that it only considers how to teach in the way demanded by the human being, by the totality of the human essence. We must put everything at the service of achieving this goal. However, it is necessary that we make compromises, because we are not yet so far developed that we can accomplish a truly free deed. The state imposes terrible learning goals and terrible standards, the worst imaginable. But people will imagine them to be the best. Today's policies and political activity treat people like pawns. More than ever before, attempts will be made to use people like cogs in a wheel. People will be handled like puppets on a string, and everyone will think that this reflects the greatest progress imaginable. Things like institutions of learning will be created incompetently and with the greatest arrogance. We have a foretaste of this in the design of the Russian Bolshevik schools, which are graves for everything that represents true teaching. We have a difficult struggle ahead of us, but nevertheless we must do this cultural deed. We must bring two contradictory forces into harmony. On the one hand, we must know what our ideals are, and on the other hand, we must have the flexibility to conform to what lies far from our ideals. It will be difficult for each of you to find how to bring these two forces into harmony. This will be possible to achieve only when each of you enters into this work with your full strength. Everyone must use his or her full strength from the very beginning. Therefore, we will organize the school not bureaucratically, but collegially, and will administer it in a republican way. In a true teacher's republic, we will not have the comfort of receiving directions from the Board of Education. Rather, we must bring to our work what gives each of us the possibility and the full responsibility for what we have to do. Each one of us must be completely responsible. We can create a replacement for the supervision of the school board as we form this preparatory course and, through the work, receive what unifies the school. We can achieve that sense of unity through this course if we work with all diligence. The course will be held as a continuing discussion of general pedagogical questions, as a discussion of the special methods concerning the most important areas of instruction, and as a seminar to practice teaching. We will practice teaching and critique it through discourse. We will take up the more theoretical aspects in the morning, and the seminar in the afternoon on each day. We will begin at 9 a.m. with general pedagogy, then undertake instruction concerning special methods at 11:30, and in the afternoon do seminar exercises from 3 until 6 o'clock. We must be completely conscious that we have to accomplish a great cultural deed in every sense of the word. Here in the Waldorf School, we do not wish to create a parochial school. The Waldorf School will not propagate a particular point of view by filling the children with anthroposophical dogma. We do not wish to teach anthroposophical dogma. Anthroposophy is not the content of the instruction. What we want is a practical utilization of anthroposophy. We want to transform what we can gain through anthroposophy into truly practical instruction. The anthroposophical content of instruction is much less important than the practical utilization of what we can create out of anthroposophy, generally in pedagogy and particularly in the special methods. In other words, how we can bring anthroposophy into teaching practice. Representatives of the confessions will give religious instruction. We will use anthroposophy only in the method of instruction. Therefore, we will divide the children among the religion teachers according to their confession. Let me say that again. Therefore, we will divide the children among the religion teachers according to their confession. This is another part of the compromise. Through justifiable compromises, we can accelerate our cultural deed. We must be conscious of our great tasks before us. We dare not be simply educators. We must be people of culture in the highest sense of the word. We must have a living interest in everything happening today, otherwise we will be bad teachers for this school. We dare not have enthusiasm only for our special tasks. We can only be good teachers when we have a living interest in everything happening in the world. Through that interest in the world, we must obtain the enthusiasm that we need for the school and for our tasks. Flexibility of spirit and devotion to our tasks are necessary. Only from that can we draw out what can be achieved today when we devote our interest to the great needs and tasks of the times, both of which are unimaginably large. This is a synopsis of Lecture 1, given August 21, 1919. The moral-spiritual aspect of teaching. The founding of the Waldorf School as a ceremony in cosmic order. The question of immortality as an example of the relationship of modern culture to human egotism. Education is a continuation of what higher beings have done before birth. Concerning the problem of prenatal education. The connection of the two doubled trinities upon entering earthly existence. Spirit human, life spirit, spirit self and consciousness soul, comprehension soul, sentient soul, with the astral, ether, and physical bodies, and the animal, plant, and mineral kingdoms, temporal body. The task of the teacher is to harmonize the spirit soul with the temporal body through 1. Harmonizing the breathing with the nerve sense process, 2. Teaching the proper rhythm between waking and sleeping. The importance of the inner spiritual relationship between teacher and child. End of synopsis. Lecture 1. Stuttgart, August 21st, 1919. We can accomplish our work only if we do not see it as simply a matter of intellect or feeling, but in the highest sense as a moral spiritual task. Therefore you will understand why, as we begin this work today, we first reflect on the connection we wish to create from the very beginning between our activity and the spiritual worlds. With such a task, we must be conscious that we do not work only in the physical plane of living human beings. In the last centuries, this way of viewing work has increasingly gained such acceptance that it is virtually the only way people see it. This understanding of tasks has made teaching what it is now and what the work before us should improve. Thus, we wish to begin our preparation by first reflecting upon how we connect with the spiritual powers in whose service and in whose name each one of us must work. I ask you to understand these introductory words as a kind of prayer to those powers who stand behind us with imagination, inspiration, and intuition as we take up this task. Brackets, the words that followed were not recorded by the stenographer. See the notes of 3 participants at the end of this lecture. It is our duty to see the importance of our work. We will do this if we know that the school is charged with a particular task. We need to make our thoughts very concrete. We need to form our thoughts so that we can be conscious that this school fulfills something special. We can do this only when we do not view the founding of this school as an everyday occurrence, but instead regard it as a ceremony held within cosmic order. In this sense, I wish, in the name of the good spirit whose task it is to lead humanity out of suffering and misery, in the name of this good spirit whose task it is to lead humanity to a higher level of development in education, I wish to give the most heartfelt thanks to this good spirit who has given our dear friend Mr. Molt the good thoughts to do what he has done for the further development of humanity at this time and in this place, and what he has done for the Waldorf School. I know that he is aware that what can be done in this work now can only be done with weakened strength. He sees things in this way. However, because we are united with him in feeling the greatness of the task and of the moment in which it is begun, and in feeling that this is a festive moment in cosmic order, he will be able to work in our midst with the necessary strength. We wish to begin our work with this in mind. We wish to see each other as human beings brought together by karma, who will bring about not something common, but something that, for those doing this work, will include the feeling of a festive cosmic moment. At the end of our course, I will say what I would like to say following today's festive commencement of our preparation. Then much will have been clarified, and we will be able to stand before our task much more concretely than we can today. Emil Mote speaks. If in this festive moment I may say a few words, I do so to express my heartfelt thanks that it has been possible for me to experience this moment. I vow to do what lies within my weak powers to help in this great task we begin today. And now Dr. Steiner speaks. My dear friends, we will begin with discussions about our pedagogical task. Today I wish to introduce these discussions. We must differentiate our pedagogical task from those previously set by humanity. Our task is not different because we believe in vain arrogance that we should establish a new direction in pedagogy, but because through spiritual science we are clear that each period in the development of humanity always sets itself new tasks. Humanity had a different task in the first post-Atlantean developmental period, another task in the second, and so forth, right up into our fifth period. However, the tasks of a human developmental era now come to consciousness only some time after the era begins. The present developmental period began in the middle of the 15th century, but the recognition of the educational task of our era is only now emerging from its spiritual basis. Until now, people, even though they worked in education with the best of intentions, still worked in the manner of the fourth post-Atlantean developmental period. From the very beginning, much depends upon our ability to correctly address our work and to understand that we must give ourselves a particular direction appropriate to our time. This direction is important, not because it is valid for all humanity in all times, but because it is valid specifically for our time. Materialism has resulted in the fact that, among other things, people have no awareness of the particular tasks of a particular period. The first thing I ask you to understand is that specific times have their specific tasks. You will be teaching children, of course, children of a particular age, and you must consider that you will be receiving these children after they have undergone the upbringing, or perhaps the neglect, of their parents during the first period of their lives. What we desire can first be completely accomplished when humanity has progressed so far that parents understand that even in the first period of upbringing, modern humanity has special tasks. We will be able to correct much of the neglect of the first period of life when we receive the children at school. Each one of us must be especially conscious of how we comprehend our teaching. When you turn to your work, do not forget that all of modern culture, right into the spiritual areas, is based upon human self-interest. When you objectively observe the most spiritual area to which modern people devote themselves, the religions, ask yourself if the basis of modern culture, particularly in religion, is not human self-interest. It is typical of modern sermons that the preacher criticizes people for their selfishness. Take, for example, something that should affect people most deeply, namely the question of immortality, and consider that today nearly everything, even sermons, is directed by an understanding of humanity that focuses upon a self-centered view of what is supersensible. Due to this self-centeredness, people want to continue to exist when they go through the gates of death. They want to retain their I. Although very refined, this is one form of egotism. Today, every religious confession appeals broadly to this egotism when addressing the question of immortality. Thus, the religions speak to people so that they forget one end of earthly existence and take only the other into account. That is, they place their focus upon death and forget birth. These things are not normally said so clearly, but they do lie at the foundation of people's thinking. We live in a time when we must combat this appeal to human selfishness in all areas if people are not to go even farther down the declining cultural path they now tread. We must become increasingly conscious of the other end of earthly human development, birth. We must be conscious that human beings develop for a long time between death and a new birth, and that during this development they come to a point where, in a certain sense, they die in the spiritual world. They come to a point where conditions in the spiritual world are such that they can no longer live there without going into another form of existence. Humans receive this other form of existence when they clothe themselves with physical and etheric bodies. What they can receive through this taking on of physical and etheric bodies, they could not receive if they continued to develop in the spiritual world. Although we can physically see children only after their birth, we need to be aware that birth is also a continuation. We do not want to look only at what the human being experiences after death, that is, at the spiritual continuation of the physical. We want to be aware that physical existence is a continuance of the spiritual, and that what we have to do in education is a continuation of what higher beings have done without our assistance. Our form of educating can have the correct attitude only when we are aware that our work with young people is a continuation of what higher beings have done before birth. Today, when people have lost their thinking and feeling connection with the spiritual worlds, they often ask abstract questions that have no real meaning for the spiritual worldview. People ask how we should guide prenatal education. There are many people today who take things too abstractly. If we take things concretely, we cannot endlessly pursue questions. I once used the example of seeing wheel tracks in the street. Then you can ask, where did they come from? Quote, a wagon that drove by. Quote, why did the wagon drive by? Quote, because the people sitting in it wanted to go someplace. Quote, why did they want to go there? End quote. At some time, this questioning must stop. So long as you remain in the abstract, you can always ask why. You can always continue this line of questioning. Concrete thinking always comes to an end. Abstract thinking continues in an endless circle. It is the same with questions concerning a not-so-common area. People think about education and ask about prenatal education. Before birth, the human being is still in the care of beings above the physical plane. We must leave the direct individual connection between the world and the individual to them. Thus, prenatal education is not a task for the child. Prenatal education can only be an unconscious result of what the parents, particularly the mother, do. If, until the child is born, the mother acts in such a way that she expresses what is morally and intellectually correct, then what she accomplishes in her own continuing education will transfer to the child. The less we think about teaching the child before it has seen the light of day, and the more we think about leading a correct life, the better it will be for the child. Education can first begin when the child is really integrated into the cosmic order of the physical plane, and that is when the child begins to breathe physical air. When children step out onto the physical plane, we must be conscious of what actually happens to them in the transition from the spiritual to the physical. We must be quite aware that the human being consists of two parts. Before the human being steps upon the physical earth, the spirit and the soul connect. What we understand as the spirit remains hidden in the physical world today, and is what we in anthroposophy call spirit human, life spirit, and spirit self. In a certain sense, these three aspects of the human being already exist in the supersensible sphere into which we must work our way. Between death and a new birth, we stand in a certain relationship to spirit human, life spirit, and spirit self. The strength that emanates from this trinity permeates the human soul, the consciousness soul, the comprehension soul, and the sentient soul. These used to be called the consciousness soul, the intellectual soul, and the sentient soul. That's me reading that aside. Okay, back to the reading. If you consider the human being preparing to step down into the physical world after having gone through the existence between death and a new birth, then you will find what I have just described as the spirit bound with the soul. Human beings step from a higher sphere into earthly existence as spirit souls or soul spirits. They cloak themselves with earthly existence. We could also describe this other part of the human being that connects with the part I have described by saying that what results from the processes of physical inheritance is brought to the spirit soul on earth. The temporal body meets the spirit soul. Once again, two trinities are connected. In the spirit soul, spirit human, let me read that again. In the spirit soul, spirit human, life spirit, and spirit self are bound together, with the soul consisting of the consciousness soul, the comprehension soul, and the sentient soul. These are all connected, and in stepping into the physical world, bind themselves with the feeling or astral body, the etheric body, and the physical body. However, these are first united in the body of the mother, and then in the physical world with the mineral, plant, and animal kingdoms, so that here as well, two trinities are united. If you observe children with sufficient objectivity as they grow into the world, then you will perceive that children's temporal bodies are still not fully connected with the spirit soul. The task of education, understood in a spiritual sense, is to bring the soul spirit into harmony with the temporal body. They must be brought into harmony, and they must be tuned to one another, because when the child is born into the physical world, they do not yet properly fit each other. The task of the teacher is to harmonize these two parts to one another. Now, let us look at this task more concretely. Of all the relationships humans have to the physical world, the most important is breathing. Breathing begins the moment we enter the physical world. Breathing in the mother's body is a preparatory breathing. It does not bring people into complete relationship with the physical world. What we properly call breathing begins only when the human being leaves the mother's body. This breathing is extremely important for the human essence, since the entire three-part system of the physical human is connected to it. We include the metabolic system as one of the members of the three-part physical human being. However, the metabolism is intimately connected with breathing. The breathing process is connected metabolically with blood circulation. In the human body, the blood circulation absorbs the material of the external world that has been brought in through other means. So that, on the one hand, breathing is in a sense connected with the metabolism. Breathing has its own functions, but in this way it is also connected with the metabolism. On the other hand, breathing is also connected with human nerve sense life. When we breathe in, we press in upon the brain fluid. When we exhale, it springs back into the body. In this way, we transfer the breathing rhythm to the brain, and breathing is connected with nerve sense life in the same way that it is connected to the metabolism. We can say that breathing is the most important human connection to the outer physical world. However, we must also be aware that breathing does not yet fully function such that it can support physical human life. When the human being enters physical existence, the proper harmony, the proper relationship between the breathing process and the nerve sense process has not yet been created. In observing children, we must say in regard to their being that they have not yet learned to breathe, so that breathing properly supports the nerve sense process. Here is a more refined aspect of what we are to do with the child. First, we must understand the human being in an anthropological, anthroposophical manner. The most important educational deeds lie in the observation of everything that properly organizes the breathing process in relationship to the nerve sense process. In a higher sense, children must learn to receive into their spirit what they are given by being born to breathe. This part of education will tend toward the spirit soul. When we bring the breathing into harmony with the nerve sense process, then we draw the spirit soul into the child's physical life. Roughly stated, we can say that children cannot yet of themselves breathe properly, and that education consists in teaching proper breathing. However, there is something else that children cannot yet properly do, and we must address this in order to create harmony between two parts of the human being, between the temporal body and the spirit soul. The other thing children cannot yet properly do at the beginning of their earthly existence, parenthesis, you will notice that normally what we must spiritually emphasize appears to contradict external world experience, parenthesis, is to complete the transition between sleeping and waking in a way appropriate to human beings. At a superficial level, we can, of course, say that children sleep quite well. They sleep much more than older people do. They even sleep into life. However, the child is not yet capable of the inner basis of sleeping and waking. Children experience all kinds of things in the physical plane. They use their limbs, they eat, drink, and breathe. However, because they experience so much in the physical plane, what they see and hear and what they do with their arms and legs when they go from walking to sleeping, However, because they experience so much in the physical plane, what they see and hear, and what they do with their arms and legs, when they go from waking to sleeping, they cannot take everything they have experienced physically into the spiritual world, process it there, and then bring the results of this work back to the physical plane. Children's sleep differs from the sleep of an adult. Normally, adults process their waking experiences during sleep. Children cannot yet carry their waking experiences into sleep. Thus in sleep they settle into the general cosmic order without taking their physical experience into the cosmic order. Through proper education, We must bring children to the point that they can carry their experience in the physical plane into what the soul spirit does during sleep. As teachers, we cannot give children anything from the higher worlds. What human beings receive from the higher worlds comes to them during sleep. All we can do is to use the time children spend in the physical plane to help them gradually become able to take what we do with them into the spiritual world. Then what they carry in can flow back into the physical world as strength. Strength they can bring from the spiritual world to become real human beings in physical existence. At first we direct all teaching toward a very high realm, toward teaching proper breathing and the proper rhythm between sleeping and waking. Of course we will become acquainted with behavioral measures that are not simply a training of breathing or a training of falling asleep and awakening. All that will only be in the background. What we will learn are concrete measures. However, we must be conscious down to the very foundation of what we do. We must be aware that when we teach children about this or that subject, we are actually working toward bringing the spirit soul more into the temporal body, and at the same time, in another direction, to bring temporality more into the spirit soul. Do not underestimate the importance of what I have just said, because you will not be good teachers if you focus only upon what you do and not upon what you are. Through anthroposophy, we need to understand the importance for human beings on earth to act not only through what they do, but more importantly, through what they are. There can be a major difference between the way one teacher and another enters the classroom. There can be a great difference, and it does not depend simply upon whether one teacher is more clever than another in superficial pedagogical techniques. Rather, the main difference is the effectiveness of teaching. Let me read that again, excuse me. Rather, the main difference in the effectiveness of teaching comes from the thoughts the teacher has had during the entire time of his or her existence and brings into the classroom. A teacher concerned with developing humans affects the students quite differently from a teacher who never thinks about such things. What actually occurs at the moment you have such thoughts, that is, when you begin to understand the cosmic meaning of the breathing process and its transformation through education, or the cosmic meaning of the rhythm between sleeping and waking. At the moment you have such thoughts, something within you fights against everything that is merely personality. At this moment, everything that forms the basis of your personality is dampened. Something of what predominates in people because they are physical human beings is quelled. When you enter the classroom in this unpretentious state, then through inner powers, a relationship is created between you and the students. In the beginning, it is possible that superficial occurrences contradict this. You go into the school and you may have rascals before you who laugh at you. Through thoughts like those we wish to cultivate here, you must so strengthen yourself that you pay no attention to this laughing and accept it simply as a superficial occurrence in the same way you would regard being out without an umbrella when it suddenly begins to rain. This is certainly an unpleasant surprise. Normally people differentiate between being laughed at and being surprised by rain when they have no umbrella. However, no difference may be made. We must develop such strong thoughts that we will not differentiate between being laughed at and an unexpected rain shower. If we permeate ourselves with these thoughts and truly believe them, then perhaps in a week or two, or maybe even longer, regardless of how much the children laugh at us, we will be able to create the relationship to them that we desire. We must create this relationship, even in the face of resistance, from what we make of ourselves. Above all, we must be conscious of the primary pedagogical task, namely that we must first make something of ourselves so that a living inner spiritual relationship exists between the teacher and the children. We must enter the classroom in the awareness that this spiritual relationship exists, that it is not only the words and the reprimands we give the children or our capability to teach that exist. All these things are superficial, but things to which, of course, we must attend. However, we cannot properly attend to them when we do not create a basis, namely, the relationship between the thoughts that fill us and the facts that should enter into the bodies and souls of the children during instruction. Our attitude in teaching would be incomplete if we were not aware that human beings are born to have the possibility of doing what they cannot do in the spiritual world. We must teach in order to bring breathing into the proper harmony with the spiritual world. In the same way, human beings in the spiritual world cannot accomplish the rhythmical changes between sleeping and waking that they can accomplish in the physical world. Through education, we must regulate this rhythm so that human beings properly integrate the temporal body into the soul spirit. This is something that, of course, we should not view as an abstraction and use directly in teaching, but it must guide us as a thought concerning the essence of human beings. This is somewhat of an appendix here, notes of three participants. I'm going to read some of this data, but that was the main body of the lecture, possibly. Participants in the course: Bertha Molt, Emil Molt, Carolyn von Heidebrandt, E.A. Karl Stockmeyer, Leonie von Mirbach, apologize for the pronunciation of some of these, Elfriede Hermann, Rudolf Treichler, Hertha Kögel, Paul Baumann, Rudolf Meyer, Johannes Geier, Herbert Hahn, Friedrich Olschlegel, Marie Steiner, Elisabeth Dolphus Baumann, Hanna Lang, Ludwig Noll, Miette Waller-Peil, Hermann Heisler. Invited guests were Andreas Körner, Luis Kieser, Walter Johannes Stein, Alexander Strakosch, Karl Emil Wolfer. The invitation to participate as a guest was only given to those members of the Anthroposophical Society who had already indicated a desire to create a similar school in other locations. In addition, educators from the Ministry of Education were invited. K. E. Wolfer and A. Körner were invited for reasons of public relations. Finally, Ida and Maria Uhland were invited. They were, however, unable to attend because they were unable to obtain leave from their school. The spoken text was not retained stenographically at this point. Two participants in the seminar, Carolyn von Heidebrandt, 1886 to 1938, and Herbert Hahn, 1890 to 1970, have written from memory the content of Rudolf Steiner's spoken words. In addition to these notes, an entry exists from the diary of Walter Johannes Stein, 1891 to 1957, who also participated in the course. And these are the notes from Carolyn von Heidebrandt. Quote, "We want to form our thoughts so that we can be conscious of the following. Behind each of us stands our angel, gently laying hands upon our head. This angel gives each of you the strength you need. Above your heads hovers a ring of archangels. They convey from one to the other of you what each of you has to give to the other. They connect your souls. Thus you receive the courage you require. Parenthesis, from this courage the archangels form a vessel. Parenthesis. The light of wisdom is given to us by the higher beings of the Archai, who do not form themselves into a ring, but come from the beginning of time, reveal themselves, and disappear into primordial distances. They project into this space only as a drop of time light falls into the vessel of courage from the active time spirit." End of notes from Carolyn von Heidebrandt. Notes from Herbert Hahn, quote, "In what we actively turn to the pedagogy of this fifth cultural epoch, and in that we wish to be active as teachers, we may carry in consciousness the fact that the beings of the third hierarchy are now moving to connect themselves with our work. Behind each individual member of the now forming faculty, we see an angel standing. He lays both hands upon the head of the earthly being entrusted to him, and in this position and with this gesture allows strength to flow over to the human. It is the strength that provides the imaginations necessary for the deed to be completed. Creatively imagining, awakening powerful imaginations, the angel thus stands behind each individual. Raising our view higher, we see hovering above the heads of this forming faculty a host of archangels. Circling again and again, they carry from each of us to the other what results from our spiritual encounter with our own angel. And they carry it, enriched by the strength of all the others, back to us. In this circle, which acts like an activity of spiritual formation, a vessel is formed above the heads of those united in this common striving. This vessel is formed from a specific substance, courage. At the same time, these circling, connecting archangels allow creatively inspirational forces to enter into their movements. The archangels open the source for those inspirations necessary for our work. Raising our view still higher, it rises up to the realm of the Archai. They are not represented in their entirety. However, from their realm, the realm of light, they let a drop descend into the vessel of courage. We feel that this drop of light is given to us from the good spirit of our time, who stands behind the founder and the founding of this new school. It is the creative forces of intuition at work in this drop of light. The Archai want to awaken the necessary intuition in those now entering this new pedagogical work. Giving strength, courage, and light, beings of the third hierarchy take part in what is now being founded. Imaginatively, inspiringly, intuitively, they wish to connect with our earthly deeds. End of those notes. From early undated notes by Herbert Hahn. Quote, imagine how behind each of you stands your angel. The angel wishes to give strength. Circling above all of you, carrying the fruit of your work and your experiences from one to another, is a ring of archangels. From their circling and carrying, the archangels form a vessel of courage. From the heights, the good spirit of the time, who is one of the Archai, allows a drop of light to fall into the vessel. In this manner, the Archai give a drop of light. End of those notes. Diary entry from August 21, 1919 by Walter Johannes Stein. Quote, beginning of the course, opened by Dr. Steiner at 9 a.m. Strength, angel. Courage, archangel. Light, Archai. Thank the good spirits who gave mold to the idea. The gods will work further with what our deed will become. That is the end of Lecture 1.